Welcome to another episode of Anti-Moon Boy News. I'm your host, Zenu. And yeah, today's episode is jam-packed. We're going to be talking about the market shutdown in China. We're going to be talking about the Stablecoin Genius Act and the vote that is going to happen next week. Wrench attacks galore. We got some more stories. We got the Bitcoin conference that is this week. And, of course, I will be commenting on the release of Darknet Market Maximalism. Yep, that's right. Air horn worthy. I'm super hype about it. Feedback has been fantastic. So we're going to be going over that in a little bit. Actually, you know what? Hey, Robot, what are your thoughts on Darknet Market Maximalism?
Bibu, I apologize. I have not read it yet. I am currently reading Anna Karenina. Bibu.
You like Tolstoy? Huh. Anyway, before we get to all of that, though, we have to go through the Super Chats. And yeah, it was a good Super Chat week. We got some big donations. So yeah, let's take a look at these. If you would like to send a Super Chat yourself, you can go to xmrchat.com/Zenu. So the first one is from Renegade. He donates 0.1337 XMR. We're hitting the air horn for that. Thank you very much, Renegade. And he says, came for the podcast, stayed for the shirt and manifesto. Well done on Darknet Market Maximalism Manifesto. DNMMM. Well, thank you very much, Renegade. Yeah, he was the one of the shirt winners. I had a t-shirt giveaway contest. And he is one of my biggest fans. That's a very generous donation, and I appreciate that, my friend. It is kind of funny, too. You know, I originally made this channel just to have, like, educational content about Monero. So I, of course, made Attack of the Poison Outputs. But I think the majority of people are now getting into my channel because of this podcast, which I have every week. So a lot of people are now listening to the podcast, and then they're going to check out Attack the Poison Outputs. But additionally, with the release of Darknet Market Maximalism, we're going to be having people who are getting into, you know, my content through the manifesto. Then they're going to check out the podcast and, you know, all the other stuff on my channel, which I think is kind of cool. I am getting, like, a lot of, like, retweets and, you know, engagement from people who aren't even in Monero right now. You know, there's a lot of people from, like, Ethereum and Solana who have been retweeting my stuff. So it's pretty cool to see the reach of this manifesto. All right, the next one, we got a donation from Private. He donates 0.1 XMR. Instead of the air horn, though, we're going to have Robot be the air horn. Robot, take it away.
Bibu. Bibu.
Well, there you have it. Yeah, he did send me a very nice message. I won't read it on the air, though, because he sent it privately. But yeah, thank you very much for that donation, my good friend. And next up, we got a massive donation, 0.5 XMR from Rational Moon Man. It's going to get loud, folks. Here we go.
Bibu. Bibu.
Yeah, I think I just blew out my speakers there. It's funny, too, because I know there are going to be, like, new listeners who haven't listened to this podcast ever, and they're probably like, what the fuck? Like, who the fuck is this guy? Anyways, from Rational Moon Man, he says, BTC through Silk Road in 2011, XMR through Alpha Bay in 2016, hodling heavy bags of both long term. Fiat sucks. KYC sucks. Prohibition is responsible for our current environment. Darknet Market Maximalism for the win. Hell yeah, man. Well, I also have to say, I like your name, Rational Moon Man. You're not a moon boy, you're a moon man. Clever. But yeah, I mean, there is something to say about Monero Moonboyism. or it's not even Monero Moonboyism. It's peer-to-peer cash Moonboyism, where you have this idea where you are investing for something to beat the state, right? You're investing in this scarce asset that is in defiance of the state. And compared to other Moonboyism, it's way cooler, I have to admit. Now, unfortunately, though, you know, over time, when you have this, like, you know, number go up kind of trend, you do tend to see this, you know, migration of, like, complete idiots to the project. And, you know, what I write about in Darknet Market Maximalism is, like, we need to prevent that. So, like, the longer that we keep this kind of, like, hardcore culture, the better for Monero. Although it's very likely that Moonboyism is inevitable with a digital asset like Monero. Fiat sucks. I agree with you. And thanks again for that donation. It really means a lot. All right, next up, we got M is for Monarujo, who donates 0.03 XMR. Thank you very much. I use Monarujo myself. He says, the Monero community really needs to pipeline more advanced users into cryptographers and developers. Anyways, can't wait for Sailor's scheme to collapse so I can get in on cheapies. Current mood, and then he posted a song, a link to a song. I'm not going to play it, but he posted a link. Well, thank you very much, Emis for Monarujo. I don't think the Monero community itself needs to pipeline more people. Well, maybe it does. I don't know. Like, I kind of feel like that kind of happens naturally as the project grows. You know, this is actually one of the best arguments for number go up. And in fact, I agree with this argument for number go up, in that you get people who are smart, you know, will go to the project if the number is going up, because it shows that the project has fundamentals. And so it kind of just naturally happens. You know, you look at Monero, right? So we had, throughout Monero's history, really brilliant developers who just left, right? Sarang, you had Ko. I mean, I haven't heard from Ko in like years, right? But instead we have Luke Parker, and Luke Parker is going to be leaving soon, I think. But we also have Ruknium and Berman, and, you know, we have all these guys who kind of just like come and go, right? So I really do think that smart cypherpunks out there who they get it. So they go to projects that interest them. And yeah, of course, Monero is interesting because it's actually being used. And I mean, the fundamentals are all there. So I don't know, like, it's kind of hard to get people to, you know, start working on a crypto project just because there's like so much stigma there, right? Although there is that project, Magic, right? Magic Grants, that Ehrenhofer, there's a bunch of people who are working on that. So I think they're doing a pretty good job of kind of doing what you're talking about, you know, bringing people. I think they have like scholarships, so they're funding audits and stuff, all good stuff. But I mean, it's difficult though, because like, we're not Zcash, you know, Zcash, you know, they have like hundreds of thousands of dollars. Right? Like, they're just dropping so much money, and we can't compete with that, like, on a financial level. But it doesn't really matter, though, because, you know, really, the tech in cryptocurrency, the tech plays second fiddle to the soul. And Monero has the soul. And because of that, even though it may lag in certain areas when it comes to technology, we'll overcome that in the long term, because we have the passion of crypto anarchism behind it. So anyways, yeah, thank you for that donation. M is for Monarujo. Next up, we got Alex Anarcho. He donates 0.03 XMR. And he says, Darknet Market Maximalism. Arise, cypherpunks. You have nothing to lose but your barbed wire fences. Thank you for this manifesto. Onwards. Hell yeah, man. Thank you. And this guy, Alex Anarcho, he made a video for... to promote XMR chat, and he actually used my channel as an example for donating. So he basically advertised for me, so it was very kind of him. He also has a podcast, by the way. I think it's only in German. Because it was funny. So I went on his website and I went to his most recent show. It's all in German, but in the timestamps, or he has the show notes of what they talk about. They talk about my show. So I'm like, well, I gotta listen to it now, but it's all in German. So I'm like trying to find out like when they talk about my show, and it didn't really work that well. I think I heard Anti-Moon Boy at one point, but then it was just like German words, and I'm like, ah, dang it. But anyways, I reached out to him. I think we are going to be doing an interview in English, of course, which would be pretty cool, because these guys, they're hardcore into crypto anarchism, so it's gonna be pretty cool talking to him. I'm sure we'll talk about Rothbard or something. And lastly, this is from Shortwave Surfer 2009. He donates 0.01 XMR. And he says, number go up, Moon Boys, pumping Monero. I will laugh in your fucking face when you get wrecked. Well, okay, whoa, whoa. It's a little hardcore there, Shortwave Surfer. Now that's an anti-Moon Boy. Holy crap. That right there is an anti-Moon Boy. Well, thank you for that donation. I want to go that far. I want to go that far. Because you have to understand, the majority of the people who are happy right now about the price going up in Monero are actually really cool people. Like, I would say the majority of them right now, like I'm on Twitter, right? So I see people very happy and stuff. And right now the people who are happy are people who are who are interested in Monero for the right reasons, right? It's that Monero Moonboyism, right? Like a rational moon man from before. People like him are happy for the most part. And that makes me happy, because these are people who share like a similar, perspective as we do when it comes to traditional finance. The problem is the people after that, right? The problem is when you get the complete idiot moon boys who then take over the project and turn it into this Frankenstein monster like we have with Bitcoin today, which is just another tool for the state. And like Bitcoin right now, it's a tech stock. It's lost all of its bite, right? It's just a tech stock. And it's very, boring. It's very sterile. And you have like boomers buying it. You have a soccer mom down the street who holds Bitcoin. And like, do you want that with Monero? Do you want a soccer mom down the street who that soccer mom? Okay, she has not heard the word, or she has not heard the phrase peer to peer in her entire life. Okay, she has not heard the phrase free open source software in her entire life. Has never gone through either ear, okay? She's never come into contact with even the concept. She has no idea. Why is she buying Bitcoin? Number go up. Like, the crypto anarchism part, that, by the way, another phrase she's never heard of, right? Those are the types of people in cryptocurrency today, which is fine. I'm not saying they shouldn't be allowed in, but these people are very easily manipulated, right? Because they just look at the charts. They're not here for the culture. So like, that's where the anti-moonboyism comes from, where it's just like, if we create a culture of number go up, that's who we're going to be drawing in. You know, these people who really don't care at all about the crypto anarchism. And that's really problematic. Now, that actually leads me to talking about the price. I mean, right now Monero's on fire, right? Like, the chart is ridiculous. It seems like every day the ratio is going up. People are talking about it, and it's starting to percolate. And if this run continues, I mean, I have no idea. Like, it's like you can only keep it underwater for so long, kind of a situation. And we haven't really seen like major influencers talk about it yet, but that's really when it's going to blow up, if it does happen. Because you can only keep it, hidden from people for so long. And that's what's kind of scary about it. Because if you have someone like, an Elon Musk talk about Monero, then you're going to have this just very stupid mob of people come into Monero. And that's when it gets problematic. And I don't know how we can really push back against something like that. Because what would happen is we would see a very violent price appreciation. And immediately would attract people who just don't care about crypto anarchism. So like, yeah, we have not seen anything yet. This is kind of just a logical appreciation as far as I'm concerned. You know, there's no way a project that's like taken seriously like Monero should be, you know, undervalued like it has been. So, you know, seeing the ratio increase and stuff, not that surprising to me. But yeah, we haven't seen anything yet. Anyways, let's move on to talking about the release of Darknet Market Maximalism, which was a couple days ago. And yeah, I'm thrilled. I'm very proud of this work. I spent a lot of time working on it, editing it, etc. And I also wanted to release it kind of all at once in an audio form, because I know most people aren't going to be sitting down reading it. So I wanted to have it with a good quality audio recording. And yeah, extremely proud of it. I've listened to it like twice now, all the way through. And for the most part, I think the only thing I would add, like one little line, is like positive things about the price going up. Because even though I've talked a lot about this on this program, it probably would have been better if I had, you know, also said like, you know, the price going up means a better hash rate, more developers working on the project, etc. Which is true, but I didn't do that. But that's like a really nitpicky thing. I think other than that, I'm really happy with kind of how it's laid out, and I think my thesis statement is very strong. If we're looking at these traditional darknet markets, over time they've gone to Monero. And that's really going to dictate the move of cryptocurrency over the next decade. I don't think people have really figured that out yet, but you're starting to see, I mean, people are paying attention to Monero. And the clout that Monero is getting from being used on darknet markets is very impressive. It throws a wrench into this narrative that there is no second best. And this is very powerful. It's a very powerful advertisement. And I am seeing this a lot with people who are, you know, very passionate about Monero talking about darknet markets. I've been doing it for a while myself. But it's really being used for this moonboyism purpose, which, again, I've kind of already talked about that, kind of inevitable. But it is happening, and I think you're really going to start to see a push, especially from younger people who feel like Bitcoin is just like too expensive. They look at something like Monero, and then they kind of get sucked into that. And it's edgy, right? It's like, it has this counterculture kind of vibe to it. And meanwhile, with Bitcoin, they're having this, you know, fucking conference this week with like all these politicians speaking at it. It's just like lame, you know what I mean? And that has an effect. That has a really legitimate effect on hype. Whereas on the other hand, you have like people, like these drug organizations dependent on something like Monero. And I mean, you can't deny this, you know, kind of like, I mentioned the Sopranos in my manifesto, but like, you know, like even if you look at like hip hop music, like there is this culture that like glorifies like the drug economy. So it's just cooler. And that like actually, I think, does have an impact on people that are interested in a project just based on that, which is weird to think about, but it is, I think, true. So it's pretty hilarious, though, because I uploaded the manifesto Saturday morning on all the different, you know, platforms. I posted it on Twitter. And, you know, I'm getting good engagement right off the cuff. I'm hype. And then like, my Twitter, it had, like, an error message, like, I can't load the page. And I was like, huh? So I, like, cleared my cache, and I was still getting, like, error messages. And so then I went on mobile, and I was still getting error messages. And I was like, oh, shit. My account must be shut down. Like, I thought the walls were closing in. I thought the walls were closing in. The feds locked my account. I was like, oh, shit. Like, looked out my window. No, it ended up being that Twitter was just like down. It happened to like Twitter like was just like on fire. Maybe I caused the outage at Twitter. I don't know. But everything was fine though. I was like, oh shit, feds are coming. I make it pretty clear in this that this is not encouraging crime at all. And I make that clear multiple times. This is more of a reframing, right? And there's kind of a reason I called it Dark Net Market Maximalism too, where it's a hook. You're kind of like, what the fuck is that guy talking about? But there's actually a logic to it where the state views a privacy advocate no different than a drug dealer. And people don't think of it that way, but that's actually what's happening. And I'm like so frustrated too, because you have these like projects out there. Zcash is the best example, where like you have smart people making privacy, and yet they're complete cucks for the state. You know what I mean? They're just totally like, totally okay with negotiating with exchanges and stuff. And it's like, how can you do that? Like the state hates privacy. They hate you. You know what I mean? Any project that is serious about privacy is open source and not negotiating with terrorists, which in this case is the state. Okay. Or KYC exchanges, right? If you're negotiating with either of those two things, you're probably not a legitimate privacy project. And the state has to respect us because we have rights. I really like the fact, like I was kind of on the edge of whether I should call it Dark Net Market Maximalism or not, but I'm like extremely happy I did end up doing it, because I think it really makes a statement, and it really emphasizes like how important peer-to-peer cash is and how much we should fight for it. All right, so we will be talking about Dark Net Market Maximalism over the next couple weeks, probably for the foreseeable future, so I'll stop there. I won't bore you guys. But let's now move on to the news. And we're going to start off, the leadoff story this week is about the shutdown of large online criminal marketplaces in China. All right, so this is from Elliptic, which is a chain analysis company. And this is what they said. On May 13th, 2025, two vast illicit marketplaces, Huion Guarantee and Zinbi Guarantee, were forced offline. Together, these platforms facilitated transactions totaling over $35 billion in stablecoins for goods and services ranging from money laundering and stolen data to human trafficking and torture devices. These marketplaces were shut down by Telegram, based on insights provided by Elliptic. So it goes on to say, some of the earliest large-scale adopters of cryptocurrency were illicit online marketplaces such as the Silk Road and Alphabay. These darknet markets were accessed through Tor, the anonymous web browser. More recently, illicit marketplaces have largely shifted to operating through the instant messaging app Telegram, which provides access to an audience of over a billion users. Foremost amongst this new generation of platforms are guarantee marketplaces, which are predominantly Chinese language markets that cater to the need of online scammers. Guarantee marketplaces are key enablers of the huge global scam epidemic, providing the goods and services needed by fraudsters in China and Southeast Asia to operate on an industrial scale. An online scammer no longer needs to find victim contact data, build communications infrastructure, or launder the resulting victim payments. Each of these can be now farmed out. Service providers selling their wares through these marketplaces. Guarantee marketplaces do not sell goods and services themselves, but instead provide a venue for individual merchants to sell customers, or to sell to customers, excuse me. The marketplace administrator controls access and operates anti-fraud mechanisms such as merchant deposits and escrow services. Bots are used to monitor the fulfillment of transactions, and almost all payments are conducted in Tether. This results in a venue where both buyers and sellers feel safe to transact, despite no identities revealed. So I'm going to stop there. So a couple things right off the bat. First off, when we talk about darknet markets, we're talking about things that are happening on hidden services. But overall illicit activity is extremely hard to measure. First off, you have illegal activity with dollars, which is way larger than anything with cryptocurrency. Like, that's trillions and trillions of dollars, right? We're not talking about that when we talk about darknet markets. Darknet markets is a sliver of that. You then have, you know, illegal things happening by people who have really, really bad OPSEC, such as this, right? Where I've heard many stories about people buying drugs through Instagram, okay? Or buying drugs through Telegram. Now, those are drugs, where this is going to be a little different. This isn't a drug market. This is scams and stuff. But I digress. You can still do illegal things basically on the clearnet. And so measuring this is very difficult. So this leads me to my first criticism of this, where I don't know where they're getting this estimate from of, like, you know, they're saying it's $35 billion on each exchange. I don't trust chain analysis companies at all. They're usually full of shit. They're usually exaggerating their findings. And we've seen this in court cases. We've seen this with announcements in the past. They have these tools, and usually these tools suck. So, I mean, I don't really trust this being, like, the largest marketplace ever. Like, that. I mean, what are you judging this by? Are you judging it by volume? Or are you judging it by actual usage by people? Another thing, too, is they're talking, they have this wide range of services, you know, ranging from money laundering and stolen data to human trafficking and torture devices. That sounds ridiculous. I really doubt they were selling human trafficking and torture devices on Telegram. That seems kind of full of shit, to be honest with you. As it is, like, anything like that on the darknet is probably glowing, right? I find that hard to believe. And now with the scamming and stuff, though, that does make sense. You know, scams, you know, ransomware and stuff, that would require a very liquid cryptocurrency. And likewise, they probably want to use something that isn't volatile, which is why they're using stablecoins. That makes a lot of sense. Of course, though, this over time is not going to work. We are going to be talking about it in a second, but there's stablecoin legislation being proposed right now in the United States. And you're going to start to see these stablecoin companies really start to clamp down on any type of activity that isn't KYC. So, like, something like this wouldn't exist anyway in the not-so-distant future. And so, anyways, yeah, I highly question the extent of, you know, the operation of these markets as they were taking place in another country anyway. So I haven't witnessed them myself, but I'm not surprised that they exist. You know, you have, like, Mexican cartels. They've been laundering money with stablecoins. That makes a lot of sense. You know, why would they use Bitcoin or Monero? You know, both of them are volatile. In Monero's case, the liquidity sucks compared to Bitcoin. So, I mean, it would make sense that they would use these stable coins. And for the most part, chain analysis companies aren't really going after, you know, people in other countries. I think you have issues with, like, jurisdictions and, like, things like that, where then you get into, like, legal complications. Now, anyways, these markets did get shut down recently, and we have seen a price pump of Monero. So it is quite plausible that this is kind of encouraging people to adopt something with privacy. And of course, with Monero being the darknet cryptocurrency, that's what would follow. And I think that's pretty logical, to be honest with you. I do have a bone to pick, though, here with this article as well, where it says, quote, "These darknet markets were assessed through Tor, the anonymous web browser. More recently, illicit marketplaces have largely shifted to operating through instant messaging app Telegram," end quote. Yeah, I don't really buy that. It depends on, like, what you're looking for, right? And where you are. And I think that depends on, like, a lot of different factors. You know, illicit activity has always existed on the clearnet. You know, you have websites, like, even Facebook and stuff. Like, there's communities that sell really bad things on there, but that's on the clearnet, right? But because more people are on the clarinet, obviously more people are going to be doing illegal things. So, you know, is it more recently? No, I think this is kind of how it's always been. But the gold standard for OPSEC of like to acquire, especially drugs, would be these darknet markets. Absolutely. And, you know, that doesn't mean that Telegram isn't an avenue, but it's not the main way, at least people in the West are acquiring, you know, drugs. One counter argument, though, which I guess kind of plays into both hands, is that I have heard of vendors who, like, once you get to know them through a darknet market, you can then talk to them over Telegram or whatever. So I guess that would be kind of like a mixture of the two, right? Where you find the vendor through Tor, but then you communicate with them on Telegram. So I guess that kind of like satisfies both of those viewpoints. But anyways, yeah, you are seeing a Monero price reaction right now. Is it caused by these markets? Not really sure, to be honest with you. It is notable though. And, you know, we will see, you know, if there's like maybe a future market, one of these guarantee marketplaces that is just Monero only in the future. Very plausible that that could happen. I definitely will say that the reign of stable coins being used in countries like China and Mexico, I really think this is going to start to plummet after the upcoming Genius legislation, which, you know, that's really going to introduce KYC and a lot of regulations to this. And you're also seeing like other banks like get together and, you know, try to launch stable coins. And the more this starts to happen, yeah, you're going to start to see, you know, a real shift into how these are monitored. And so I really doubt something like this could still happen. So next up, we have an article here that talks about the Genius Act and what is happening with that. This is actually from Chainalysis. They wrote an article. I guess they write articles now. But it says here, United States Senate advances Genius Act, long-awaited stablecoin framework edges closer to reality. And the too long didn't read. The United States Senate has broken a filibuster and advanced the Genius Act, the first comprehensive federal framework regulating stablecoins. The bill is now headed to the Senate floor. With the total market cap of stablecoins hovering around $232 billion and growing, the bipartisan bill sets standards for reserves, audits, disclosures, and law enforcement compliance. Chainalysis's advanced blockchain tooling can help issuers and regulators operationalize compliance and enforcement under the new law. The legislation arrives at a time of historic growth for the stablecoin ecosystem, as stablecoins now account for the majority of on-chain transaction volume. Okay, introduced in 2014, stablecoins were designed to combine the stability of fiat currencies with the speed and transparency of the blockchain. While initially used for crypto trading, use cases have expanded greatly, with fiat-pegged stablecoins now powering cross-border payments, serving as a store of value, and unlocking global access to the United States dollar-denominated assets. Since 2020 in particular, stablecoins have seen significant growth in both issuance and adoption, with the market cap now at $232 billion. At its core, the Genius Act is both a consumer protection and national security measure, bringing long-anticipated federal oversight to the stablecoin market. All right, let's read through these. It says consumer protection provisions, full reserve backing with U.S. dollars or similarly liquid assets, monthly public disclosures, annual financial audits, market restrictions, national security provisions. All right, this is where it gets interesting. Bank Secrecy Act compliance, such as anti-money laundering and sanctions programs, transaction monitoring and record keeping, customer identification and enhanced due diligence, suspicious activity reporting. Next up, we have technical enforcement capabilities, such as issuers must demonstrate the ability to freeze or burn tokens. Non-compliant foreign issuers may be barred from United States markets. And lastly, sanctions enforcement coordination. The Treasury Secretary must coordinate with issuers where feasible before blocking transactions involving foreign entities. As stablecoin adoption accelerates and regulations like the Genius Act take effect, both issuers and regulators need trusted tools to build safe, transparent, and compliant markets. The Act introduces foundational rules, from strict AML requirements and reserve standards to novel oversight mechanisms, but also includes some of the more debated provisions, such as a ban on yield-bearing stablecoins and certain restrictions on large technology firms acting as issuers. And the last thing here, Chainalysis Sentinel, which I guess is the tool that Chainalysis is promoting here, which I have not heard of until now. It's an ecosystem monitoring solution designed to assist token issuers and... I can't fucking read this right now. It sucks ass. Let's just say that. Basically, Chainalysis is going to provide real-time alerts on suspicious activity, automated address freezing and block listing via API, end-to-end monitoring across 35 behavioral risk categories, integrate workflows with KYT for issuance and redemption oversight. Yeah, fuck that. This is what I'm talking about, though. So, interesting stuff nonetheless. Stablecoins are about to be really fucked over. So we have this market here of people using stablecoins for illegal purposes, right? Or just using it in general. It's being KYC'd. Now, this is going to have an interesting effect. The transition period is going to be pretty wild because this hasn't even been introduced yet. And we haven't seen it play out yet, but I'm expecting that a lot of these illicit markets are going to be attacked pretty quickly. We shall see, right? And so really two things are going to happen because of this. The first is that more people are going to use Monero. The second is that stablecoins that aren't regulatory friendly may become popular. However, there's a real problem here. The problem is, for a stablecoin to have trust, it needs legitimacy. And it's really hard to have legitimacy if you don't have that like one-to-one backing. Now, obviously, it hasn't really been an issue with Tether. Like, I get it, but Tether is just a large company anyway. So if you introduce a privacy stablecoin, this is much harder. Because it needs to be algorithmic, and it also needs guarantees that it won't be censored. And that is very difficult to do. And people have tried in the past and they have failed. And I have seen other attempts at doing this, but they suck. Will this, over time, will people build solutions for this? Very plausible. So anyways, that is the Genius Act. We shall see a vote on that upcoming. When's the vote, actually? So yeah, I don't see when the final vote is. It should be as soon as next week. Probably sometime next week. We will see if this passes. All right, so moving on. We have an update to the Coinbase data breach. That being that the data breach actually happened back in December of 2024. Yeah, from their initial statement, you know, they made it seem like they've been on top of this. But this has been now ongoing for multiple months now. And now they are coming clean about this whole breach. So basically, threat actors have been, with the access from the insiders, attacking Coinbase now for like 5 months before Coinbase figured out that there was a leak. They're incompetent. Nothing really much else to say here. That does lead me to believe that that hack that we saw recently with Monero, those funds very likely linked to Coinbase. Speaking of the hack, the accused individual is trolling ZackXBT using the input data from this Ethereum transaction. He called ZackXBT a bozo, and he linked to a YouTube video, which is a video of James Worthy smoking on a pack. It's actually pretty funny. So, some good old trolling from this guy who is currently being watched at the moment. ZackXBT does deal with a lot of different bad guys and stuff. So this is nothing new. Yeah, this person apparently stole $300 million. So that's probably why they're smoking a pack. Next up, we got two wrench attacks here. The first one, this was an American tourist in London. He lost $123,000 in crypto after he was abducted by a fake Uber driver. Basically, his drink was spiked. Yeah, it's a pretty fucked up story. He was drugged by the Uber driver. And he basically, it's like a sedative, and it makes people like open to suggestion, essentially, which is really fucked up. And he just gave away his keys and everything. And the guy is probably going to get away with it. The other one is actually even more fucked up. This was a crypto investor allegedly tortured a Italian businessman with a chainsaw for weeks in a luxury New York City pad in a sadistic scheme to gain a password. I'm not going to bother reading the article. You can look this up. I do have to say, first off, this guy apparently is involved with Grin. He did some security audit for Grin, which is weird. So there's that. But the other thing is, this guy, this Italian guy, I gotta say, lasting like weeks being tortured and not giving up your password, this dude's a fucking badass, man. Like, if I'm telling a guy a secret, it's gonna be that guy, because he is, he's friggin' hardcore. It's a crazy story, though. He was being like tased and shit and forced to take drugs. But somehow he did not give up his key. So yeah, that's a real one. I'm sure we're going to be hearing more on this story. It's a weird story. This guy was like pretty rich anyway. He lived in like a penthouse, which is kind of unusual for these wrench attacks. Usually it's, you know, some lowlifes who are trying to get money. But this guy already apparently had money. So I don't know. Maybe he was involved in like organized crime or something and he owed a debt. Freaking weird story, though. Yeah, these wrench attacks are everywhere. And that leads me to what is probably going to be a hub of wrench attacks, and that is the Bitcoin conference. It actually starts tomorrow, and it's May 27th to May 29th at the Venetian Convention Center in Vegas. And it looks pretty freaking terrible, to be honest with you guys. This is the speaker lineup. Now, J.D. Vance, Ross Ulbricht. So Ross Ulbricht is the good one. This is the one you want to see. But also J.D. Vance, Michael Saylor, Cynthia Lummis, David Sacks, who's the crypto czar, Bo Hines, don't know who that is, some politician, Vlad Tenev, who is the chairman of Robinhood, Adam Back, who's a sellout, Jack Maulers, Pussy, and Paulo Arduino, the CEO of Tether. That's the lineup. Terrible. Terrible. But anyway, yeah, Ross is speaking, though. So that's going to be really interesting. Because obviously, with Ross back now, I'm sure he's got a lot to say. A couple other interesting ones we got here. Peter Schiff is speaking. I would like to hear Peter Schiff just take a dump on the Bitcoiners. I would like to hear that. And actually, I don't know if I want to hear anyone else. Yeah, it's a pretty rough list. I mean, I'm looking over it right now. Yeah, lots of just douchebags. Oh, but I guess the Trump sons are going to be there, both of them. I don't know. I don't know why. A couple other politicians too. So yeah, I think at the, I would imagine at the actual conference, security is going to be fucking ridiculous because, you know, you have some pretty high ranking politicians there. But anything around that conference, watch out, man. That's going to be, you're going to be having wrench attacks all over the place, I would imagine. So if you are going there, don't walk around with your, with your savings is what I would advise. That is this week. And hopefully they publish some of these talks. I would like to react to them if at all possible. on this program. Okay, some quick Monero news. The Monero hash rate hit another all-time high at 6.25 gigahashes per second. Yeah, it's just pumping right now, not only with the price going up, but also with the Atari merge mining. I'm sure we'll have another all-time high like next week at the rate we're going. And secondly, a article was published on CoinDesk about Monero, and they referred to Monero as controversial, and that's getting a lot of reaction here. I don't know. I mean, this is the framing of privacy has always been that bad guys are using privacy, and that's kind of the point of darknet market maximalism. Okay, yeah, we're the bad guys. Now what are you going to call us? Kind of thing. So I don't even know why they would call it controversial, though. Like, what has Monero done that is controversial? You know, they bring up that terrorists have accepted it, but like, I mean, dollars have been used for how many crimes now? But you're not saying controversial when you're talking about the dollar, right? So, I don't know. Stupidity, but it's par for the course. Okay, for the last topic today, we are going to talk about Pizza Day. Pizza Day was last week. Basically, it is the anniversary of a Bitcoiner who happened to spend something like 10,000 Bitcoin on a pizza way back in the day. And, you know, really this illustrates the divide between the modern Bitcoiner, who is really just a disciple of Saylor and a moon boy, versus the peer-to-peer cash advocate. And to really emphasize this, MicroStrategy tweeted out this image, and it says, Bitcoin Pizza Day at Strategy, paid for with USD. And they posted this with all these, you know, pictures of pizza boxes. And I mean, this is yet another moment where they show you exactly how they feel about Bitcoin. And nothing's going to change because they've taken over Bitcoin. They're trying to act funny, saying that they're using dollars instead of using Bitcoin because dollars are useless compared to Bitcoin. But like I've been saying, and many other people have been saying, we want to use cryptocurrency and we advocate for the use of cryptocurrency. And this is just playing into the store of value meme. Which is true, like store of value is like relevant, but this is just pathetic. You know, the whole point of Pizza Day is to say that we are using an alternative source of money. That's the whole point of it. And to not really care about the fact that 10 years from now, what you're using cryptocurrency for now might be valued way higher. You're not thinking about that. Sure, you might be you know, saving cryptocurrency in cold storage over time, but you're also actively using it. And you're using it to get to that point where the cryptocurrency will continue to grow, so your cryptocurrency will be valued more. So this guy, Laszlo, I think his name is. Yeah, this guy, he bought a pizza with Bitcoin, and he's like mocked these days. He's like made fun of, like, oh, I wonder if he regrets it kind of thing. And yeah, I mean, all these people do is they just look at dollar signs. That's all they care about. Because if you didn't have people like Laszlo, you know, if you didn't have people like this guy, you wouldn't have Bitcoin at the valuation it is at now. And this kind of ties back to, you know, what I've been talking about with darknet market maximalism, where if you didn't have darknet markets, Bitcoin wouldn't be where it's at now. And the reason for that is because people need cryptocurrency for darknet markets. So they're just actively using it. And the store of value just isn't relevant to them. It wasn't relevant to them during the Silk Road time, right? They weren't even thinking about that. They were just using it, right? The value of Bitcoin when they were using it to buy drugs, it was just a short-term annoyance to them. Oh, it's up. It's more expensive today than it was yesterday. Well, that's kind of annoying. Kind of situation, right? They weren't thinking about the long term. It's an important concept because they're just actively using it, right? They're using cryptocurrency. And so anyways, when you have this mindset of, you know, oh, we're only using cash and we're holding on to Bitcoin, you're just having an asset that is a tech stock. And this is what they're telling you right now. Hey, hold on to this tech stock, okay? Use dollars instead. You know, use fiat, but hold on to a tech stock. Don't actually use Bitcoin, you know? And every time too, like, you see people act like outraged and stuff. It's like, dude, this is what they are. This is what Michael Saylor believes. And I don't know how many more times we have to tell you this, but it's compromised at this point. You know, people are still fighting back, but this is the narrative going forward. And he also owns a lot of Bitcoin, so it's his way or the highway. So anyway, happy pizza day. And by the way, I have merch at antimoonboy.com/merch if you want a t-shirt. I will be on vacation June 1st to the 8th. I will be still doing an Anti-Moonboy episode for that. But during that week, I won't be shipping any t-shirts, unfortunately. But other than that, guys, thanks for listening. And if you haven't checked it out yet, Darknet Market Maximalism is out. Go to antimoonboy.com/darknetmarketmaximalism. You'll find it on the website. And yeah, give it a listen and let me know what you think. Anyways, thanks for the support, guys. And I'll see you guys next week.